We can begin.
Hey, was that Rabbi Mantel?
No, Mantel phone. Okay, let us begin over here. Okay, we're going to conclude the halachas of Bishul and Pasachim, speak a little bit about Kol Yisrael, and other shilas ben Yisrael la'akum. We presented in the last week or so the two Isurim of Pasachim and Bishulachim. Pasachim, as we mentioned, refers to any bread. And if everyone recalls, I can't recall who was here by every share, so if I'll repeat it quickly, you'll allow me. Pasachim doesn't just mean bread, but it means any cake or any cookies. And the way you decide what's Pasachim is if you're Kaveh Asuda, you make Hamaitzi. Person eats a lot of cookies. What bracha does he make? He makes hamaitzi. Eat a lot of cake, you make hamaitzi. It has to be an awful lot. Don't worry if you indulge in the second piece. You haven't arrived there. But what is the reason? Because cake and cookies is really bread. But we don't make hamaitzi on it because since it's not the type bread that we are kiveya sud, it's not the type bread that we eat as part of a dinner. So therefore, it's not chashuv to make hamaitzi. But if we're kiveya sud on it, then we make hamaitzi even on bread and cake, because it's bread. Challah, you have to take. Person makes a big cake at home, you have to take challah from the big cake. Why? It's only cake. You don't make challah if you make a large lakshenkugel. The answer is, lakshenkugel, you can eat five lakshenkugels. You will not make hamaitzi. But you eat a lot of cake, you will make hamaitzi, and therefore it is considered bread, and you have to take challah. That defines pasachim. Bishulachim is anything that is cooked. Now, bishulachim has a chumrah, as I said, that it was a takana that was accepted by Klal Yisrael, and we cannot be lenient. The fact that it's commercially produced is not a heter. However, bishulachim has two interesting halachas that pasachim doesn't have. Number one, if something is cooked that can be eaten when it's raw, there is no bishul akum. If something is cooked that doesn't find itself on a royal table, today a royal table may be defined as a state dinner, there is no iser bishul akum on that. So bishul akum has its leniencies, and pas akum has its leniencies. A person has a piece of bread that is not a very tasty piece of bread, and you imagine you wouldn't find it in the White House, but it's pasachim. Doesn't have that leniency. But if you have cornbread or other bread that are basically not hamaitzi, then already it won't be pas, but it will be bishul. This is the overview, the difference between bishulachim and pasachim. And you see the various hechsherim view certain foods differently. Obviously, we don't have a very clear definition of precisely what's oilal shulchan alachim. You're going to go to the one who prepares state dinners. You're going to ask them, do they use that food on the table? Maybe that would be one way to do. But normally, there are things that surely won't find itself on a royal table and certain things that will find itself on a royal table. Now, when it comes to pasachim, mostly everyone is lenient if the Jew lit the fire, or if the Jew didn't light the fire, he put in the bread, or if the Jew didn't put in the bread, he made the fire a little bigger. And the Chazal say even he throws in a toothpick into the fire, which means his contribution was minimal. It was only, in a way, just a lezecher, just something which is ritual, a commemoration, a reminder that something is different here. It's not pasachim. When it comes to bishulachim, there's a big machlokes if we need the actual placing of the pot on the fire, or is it sufficient if the fire is turned on. My observation, I think I mentioned last week, is that we depend on turning on the fire, even though the Vilna Gaon does not agree with that. But my observation is, when you go into a hechsher, reliable hechsherim, the Jew turns on the fire, that's sufficient for it to be Bishul Yisrael. To require that the Jew should place the food on the fire, I think, would be extremely onerous. If it's the halacha, there'll be something we have to do, but I think there's enough shittas to depend on that we do not have to do it, and I think that's basically the minhag ha'olam. And then we also spoke last week about the question of a maid, a housekeeper in the house, there may be some leniencies b'di'evid. So if you come home and you find that your chont was cooked by a non-Jew, meaning non-Jew turned on the fire, placed the pot of chont on the fire, don't panic. Maybe b'di'evid we can be moderate. And the logic behind it is that we have two legs to stand on. One leg, that it is the Beis Yisrael, Reb Avram, that there's no Bishul Akum in the house of a Jew, if it was done for a Jew, let me in. If the housekeeper cooks for herself, we have no leniency. But if the housekeeper cooks for a Jew, we do have a leniency. Can't depend on it, but that is in conjunction that maybe with a maid or a housekeeper, we don't have the Klal Bishul Akum. Some say because since she's in a subservient role, so therefore you won't come to socialize, because Bishul Akum and Pasachum, by and large, are built on the fear of socializing and intermarriage, and someone who's subservient, who's there in order to serve you, that's her capacity. Some hold that there is no fear of intermarriage. Yes, Andy?
She cooks for herself, can it trade up
the kelim? There's a machlaikis in the Paiskin whether Bishul Akum prohibits the kelim. We paskin it does, but again, if we have another seer, if we can be makel. The Shitas Ha'ra'ah is that kelim don't become usher, because really Bishul Akum is not like chazer. Bishul Akum is not something trade. Chazal said, let's not do that, because it will lead to socializing, lead to intermarriage. That's when you're talking about actual food was cooked. But if actual food wasn't cooked, it's only absorbed into the walls of the kli. The fact that you're using the kli, you're not really eating the food from the Gentile. That is the svar of the Rush. But we do not paskin like that. Most places can say the kelim become usur. But yet, if there's a dubious way whether you could kosher the kelim, you could be lenient. For instance, a kli cheres, a earthenware kli, you cannot kosher. Some hold you could kosher by making hagolah three times. Maybe over here you could depend on the hagolah three times. But hagolah, the way you purge it, by putting the utensil that was used for the non-kosher food into boiling water, and you do that three times. So, I think it's the Shitas Baal HaIter, but we don't depend on that when it comes to Tarfus. But when it comes to Bishul Akum, that some hold you don't have to worry about the kelim at all, then many Paiskim say you could depend on the Baal HaIter. So it's sort of having two Sveikis, that it's mutter, and then we allow the kosher kelim. Otherwise, kelim are kosher. Shabbos, person's not well. You can't get your friendly neighbor who is Jewish to cook. You have to get a non-Jew to cook. Bishul Akum is suspended. Bishul Akum is suspended. So if someone's not feeling well on Shabbos, and if he's not feeling well to the extent that it allows him to have a non-Jew do a melacha for him, Amir Lakum. Amir Lakum is mutter b'makam chayli. The chayli has to be a chayli that's nafal mishkav, has to be a chayli that's bedridden. You could tell a non-Jew to cook for you. But what happens to Bishul Akum? Bishul Akum is also suspended. A special dispensation for Shabbos for ill people. Now, why is that so? We have an interesting machlokes between the Ra and the Rajma. The Ra's opinion is the reason why it's so is because even though we usually don't make differences in halacha, we always have a klal, we like to give a halacha for all cases, because if we make loopholes, it's going to sort of chip away. But on Shabbos, in time of difficulty, we made a loophole, that's not the type of cooking that will lead to socializing. You cook for a nice dinner, to chat over a cup of coffee, eat a little bit of pasta, that could lead to intermarriage in the long realm of things. But cooking for a sick person, that's not the social cooking that is prohibited. Yeah.
Two questions. One, is this a
kula
or where Chazal never...
Never. No, they weren't for chayil, they were mekel. Right. Nothing wrong to depend on. It's not a bakushi yatiru. You have to be a Yaitzev and Nichlas. We once spoke about that, I think, not only over here Monday night, but the Avikala, that's a general Shaila. Leaving a non-Jew in the house without any supervision is of dubious correctness. Now, do you have to kasha your kalim afterwards? Possibly not. But it's really a little bit of a problem. I know people over here who have housekeepers are confronted with the problem. The best way to deal with that is to have some sort of seal on the cabinet. It has to be worked out such a system. Because if you evaluate it logically... Well, the refrigerator is really the least of the problem because everything is sealed, you know. If well, then you have to wrap it in a way that will be considered a seal. Then you'll have two seals, and therefore it is violated. You would know it's violated. By a practical way of looking at it, you know, not that the halacha looks at it as, in a practical way. We sometimes can't understand the practicality of halacha, but I think we could appreciate. If you have a well-meaning, nice housekeeper who's in the house every day, let's say 9 to 5 while you're out of town, let's take an extreme case. You know, she gets hungry and, you know, let's say she has her own hot dog. She won't see anything wrong to warm it up in your pot. You know, well, what's wrong? She'll wash it out and dry it, you know, and told her not to, but, you know, she doesn't appreciate our Torah to understand that that's a violation and it's going to cause a deep non-tarfus. But this halacha, you have to be a yaitz of nichnas. How often? Not so clear. But the fear of you being a yaitz of nichnas, a mirsis, that's enough to prevent the problem. But otherwise, it's a problem. It's a problem. However, Maisha quotes it in his tshuva, even though really he doesn't reveal to us anything more than Shulchan Aruch says. Maybe he reveals to us that for the Yevon utensils you could use. So that's at least helpful in that respect. Now, the Rajba disagrees and says, the Rajba understands that the reason why Bishul Akum is mutter for a chayla is maybe like you were suggesting, not because the whole concept of socializing doesn't apply when you're cooking for an ill person. Because for a chayla, they were lenient because bekushi hitiru. It was something which they allowed. The nafkaminas, are you allowed to eat the leftover food Motzei Shabbos? Let's say a non-Jew on Shabbos cooked for you a good dish, hot soup, good type of food, and the chayla ate and left some over. Could you eat the leftovers of Moshe Shabbos, which is really the machlokes between the Rajma and the Ra, whether you're allowed? We're machmir, but the kalim we are makel, because here we have the sex fake, and number one, maybe the Ra is correct, that it's not us, because it wasn't made for socializing. It was made for medical, for health reasons, and secondly, maybe the kalim are never usher. So, if you have a non-Jew cook for you on Shabbos, in the case of chayli, you know it's totally in this machlokes. Now, I think I mentioned, we're learning this in the Gemara, so it's hard to remember where I mentioned it. Bishul Akum is only when you cook with heat. If you let's say, salt something, in halacha we say meliach kumavushal, not by bishul akum. You need heat. If you smoke something, smoking something is not bishul akum. And the logic behind it, as the Paiskim say, because even though sometimes the smoke is hot, if the smoke is cold, nothing to talk about. It's not through heat. But even if the smoke is hot, the impact is not necessarily from the heat alone, but it's from the smoke, because smoke that is cold also could have an impact on processing the food, so therefore there's no bishul akum. Steam, even though some wanted to be makel with steam, but most places say steam is regular cooking, because after all, steam is heat, and heat is the underlying factor in the definition of what cooking is. So therefore, something that is smoked, good old smoked, when I smoke fish, let's say, make sure it's kosher, of course, that's fine. But if it's steamed vegetables, that is prohibited, because steamed vegetables is a process of cooking, and therefore it is usher.
But you can eat the vegetable raw.
If the vegetable, you can eat raw. Often, right. If you can eat the vegetable, yeah, let's say it's a pumpkin. I don't think you can eat a pumpkin raw. I don't think raw pumpkins taste good. An egg you could eat raw also, but an egg is bishul akum, because it's not whether you could actually consume it and it could go down the gullet. It's whether it's really somewhat attractive and people eat it. We did have a confession last week that there were those who eat raw eggs, so Don't be so embarrassed if you belong to that group that the European mothers force you to eat raw eggs for health. And they help, Baruch Hashem, you know, those people grew up well. Now, there is a kula that not many people depend on, but Lamaisa, a pilot light. I'm not saying you can depend on it, but it's a kula. Got to know the kulas like we have to know the chumras, because we have to know when to apply them. If you make a light, and that light is designated, that other lights should be ignited from it, some hold that's enough to take off the shalakim. So let's say b'shas ha'tchak gogol, person puts a candle, and he tells all the workers that are making this beautiful big dinner, if you need a light, please don't turn on the oven. Take the light from here, just turn on the gas of the oven, and let the light come from this fire. Some say that would be as if the Jew lit the fire. Me'esh le'esh. It's a big kula. We don't depend on it. Even turning on the fire itself, the Vilna Gaon doesn't depend on it. But that I express, the Minagai wants to be Simech on that. But I'll compare them. B'shas ha'pchah gadol, b'tzi rufim, you could depend on it. B'shalakum, I'm saying you have to ask a shayla. I don't want to say you can depend on it because it is really a shitas yachid. B'shalakum, after everything is said and done, is an issur d'rabbanan. Suffik is l'kula. There is a shita which we paskin like the shach. Many achrayim quote him that even though when iser falls into heter, you need 60 times heter to be mavatal the iser. Someone just was speaking to me about a shaila that certain formula for children not kosher, but the doctor says this is the formula the child needs. So if it's a sakana, there's nothing to talk about. It's not only permitted; it's mandatory that the child is given that. But if it's, let's say, nothing so urgent, you have to decide, is it bottle bereit? Sometimes they have non-kosher ingredients in foods, in medications. I was involved in investigating, calling up the company, but it could be bottle bereit. But Bishul Akum is an Isser Kal, you don't even need 60. One and two is fine. Usually you need 60 times the heter in order to, 60 times the Isser in order to have the proper bottle bereit. Here we don't need the 60 times. Here it's enough if you have right. It just comes to show you that the Isser Bishalakum is an Isser Kal, it's not an Isser Chomer. But it's Usser, can't be mastered capriciously, but surely by a Suffolk, if you have a doubt whether this was placed by you, this was placed by a non-Jew, you turned on the fire, someone else turned on the fire, it will be a Suffolk, and you could say Suffolk through Rabbanan Lekula. Now, let me just go on to some other interesting halachas concerning Yisrael Va'akum. Let's touch an interesting Gemara we had recently in Avodah Zarah, but I think it gives you a little bit insight how you depend on Hechsher. The Gemara says over there, when you come to Surya, the Gemara in Masechta Avodah Zarah, you had a storekeeper. Storekeepers, when you ate at their house, you could depend on them. But when you bought in the stores, you can't depend on them. Why the dichotomy? Because that, what? Selling to Jews. Because you know, they were from people, and they were conscientious about their kashrus, but they weren't too scrupulous in the isser of lifnei iver loisitei michshol. They figured, listen, business is business. Now, it's kind of odd, because it's probably not just lifnei iver loisitei michshol, it's probably close to gzeila. If I misrepresent to you, and it's clear you would not have purchased this item if you know the item wasn't kosher. But that was a type person that in his house he ate, and therefore you could eat in your house. You could eat in his house. I don't know if you'd want to eat in his house, but you could. But in the store you couldn't buy. So Rashi and other Rishonim seem to say this was specific to Surya. By Surya they had sort of a, let us say, a unusual behavior pattern. They kept kosher, but you couldn't trust them when they sold in stores. The Rambam has a different shita. The Rambam shita is any Jew you encounter that you don't know him personally or heard about him personally, that he's muchzik v'kashrus, that he's a meticulous Jew, doesn't mean he has to be the biggest tzaddik in the world. He's a person who's careful in maicholus, in kashrus, in other mitzvahs of Torah. You cannot buy anything from him. Why? Because he may be lenient when it comes to chemnis hamamin, and he may violate an evil loisitei michshol. But in his house, he could eat. So therefore, a store that has no hechsher, according to the Rambam, you can't buy from it unless you happen to know the owner. It's insufficient if the owner looks frum. It's insufficient. He could look like a very religious Jew. Makes no difference. You can't purchase from him an item of food unless he has a reputation you know personally or you know from someone else. You get in his house, at least in those days, you figured, listen, the guy doesn't eat tarfus, and if he's at his home, we can assume he's eating kashrus, and you can eat also. When it comes to business, you cannot depend on him. The Achrayim write, the Taz, and the Aruch HaShulchan reflects on this, that today everyone passes like that cheetah because of the situation they observed in the world. And then they went further. Generally, we don't allow stores existing without a hechsher. Recently, my son called me up and he told me that there was someone coming to the yeshiva that was selling chul Thursday night. I don't know if you know yeshivas, they like to eat chul Thursday night, Friday night, Shabbos night, and Sunday. They seem to think it's very healthy. So I told him on the phone, I said, you may look like a frum guy, but you can't buy from him. You know, you have to check out if he has a reputation. You know, maybe easy to check out. Doesn't mean he has to be what people will say the most pious person in town. He has to be an El Chayid. You have to see the doctor of the mitzvahs. He puts on film in the morning. He Shabbos, you see, he doesn't do anything that's prohibited. You have to see. He's among the religious Jews that we know who practice our religion. But just the fact that he looks religious and he talks religious and he seems to be religious, when it comes to kashrus, we cannot depend on it. That is the yesod of having a hechsher. I remember when I was a bacher in yeshiva, there were some stores that didn't have hechsherim. Today I don't think it exists. Not restaurants, but bakeries. I remember a bakery in Brooklyn. No hechsher. He was probably, he was mukhsa b'kashrus, I guess the owner. The owner was a, you know, a person that had a reputation.
Well,
he wasn't a rub, the owner. The owner wasn't a rub. You know, maybe he needed a little sidelines to open the bakery, as I can see sometimes. But that wasn't the case. He was a ball bus, nice ball bus. I don't think today that exists. No Hechsher. Schmel?
No, I think it's
Wasserman Lemberg. Oh. Lemberg's a butcher store. Butcher store has no Hechsher. Wow. Rabbi Heineman allowed that to get by? Because it's unusual. Most of the kashas is mutter. I'm not saying it's not mutter, but the way the Aruch HaShulchan says, as an outgrowth of this halacha, it was sort of like a understood hanhaga that everyone should have a hechsher. See, a butcher store maybe is a little bit fundamental in creating its food, meaning you don't have to have a lot of different food items. But a restaurant, in addition to the integrity, he has to be knowledgeable. People make mistakes as to what is acceptable, what is not acceptable. A lot of spices, person may think, oh, it doesn't need a hechsher, maybe it does. So really a hechsher not only makes sure that there is integrity and honesty, but it also gives knowledge to a hechsher to make sure that things are purchased that need a hechsher with the hechsher, and he gives them an understanding what doesn't need a hechsher. But things have changed a lot, and even though Aruch HaShulchan recognizes today, all stores in his area, like a takana, the way he puts it, that you must have a hechsher to make sure a person knows exactly what he's doing. And, you know, that's understandable.
Like the butcher in Muncie.
What?
Like the butcher in Muncie, they would lay on, but he did have a hechsher, I believe. That one who was buying trade meat.
I hate to tell you, he did. He had one of the best hechshers in Muncie. I hate to tell you. Yeah, but let me tell you something also. I think the incident in Muncie taught us a few things. But one of the big lessons is that, well, yeah, but I think there's a lesson that if the person who you're giving a hechsher on is not elach, is not trustworthy, the best hechsher won't work. I think, you know, could they have watched him? He could slip something in his pocket. I mean, a guy who's willing to go to that extreme and actually, you know, sometimes you think a person's hechsher, listen, he doesn't want to accept this hechsher, you know, now I have to make a chasna, I'll put in some spice to have a little. I know it's good anyway. You know, people rationalize. My rabbi says, you know, I can't use this from the OK, I'll use it from the OU, from the OK. You know, he has his prejudices. But to bring in trace meat, you know, you have to be a special type of person. you have to be not only, I think, almost a non-believing Jew to do such mass lifnei iver loy sitan michshol, but also it's a question of honesty. You know, in addition, not bein avul lamakom, your belief system has to have been totally missing. But in terms of bein avul chaveru, you really did such a horrible thing to all the people who are concerned about it. But it comes to tell you, if the person who receives the hechsher is not an elicha person, how do you always know? I mean, does he look like an elicha person? He gave it up for every dumb for the yomim. I mean, listen, there'll always be cases that we'll be able to catch. You know, someone asked me about a hechsher on a person who is not observant, married a non-Jew. You know, what do I think about the hechsher? I say, you know, I don't really know the hechsher personally. It has a great reputation. And I would say, fine, you could use it. But I would say in this particular case, you know, I'd be a little bit hesitant because it's hard to watch someone if the person you're watching really is not concerned out of anything other than the business sense with the hechsher. You know, how do you watch him? You can always bring things in when someone's not looking. He could change things. You know, Bishalakim, he's going to care. You know, the fire went off and he'd scream across the room, turn on the fire, you know, he cares about it. So the hechsher, I think it's good to have not only a good hechsher, but also it should be on someone who has a certain amount of elikait. Now, let me mention another halacha or two. Let's mention Chol B'Yisrael just to give an idea. What's with Chol B'Yisrael? Is there a problem? Is there not a problem? Now, Chol Yisrael was demanded, or Chol of Akum was prohibited because of the fear that there's kosher, the kosher milk has in it non-kosher milk. It can't be 100% non-kosher milk because it has a different color. It's yellow. Kosher milk is white. But you could put a little bit non-kosher milk into the kosher milk, and the reason being because it's cheaper. It was cheaper. It'll increase the volume, and the seller of the milk will make a couple more cents on each sale. So therefore, Chazal said, no milk without a Jew being present. Now, there's three ways to view that. The Prichodesh's way is, there's nothing special about this takana. Maybe it's treif. Like, maybe the meat you're eating is not kosher. Maybe the candy's not kosher. But if we really don't think that way because of circumstances, for instance, maybe the milk of non-kosher animals is not found in the vicinity. Maybe the milk of non-kosher animals are more expensive than kosher animals, so who would dilute it? Therefore, there's no problem of chol of a non-Jew in such a circumstance. Based upon that, according to B'Chodesh, there's no inyan of chol Yisrael b'zman hazeh, because I don't think anyone really thinks the milk, which is not chol Yisrael, is not kosher. I don't think anyone thinks that non-kosher milk was introduced today. The only thing is that the rabbanim, it's a rabbinical prohibition, not applicable today because of the circumstance. That's the shita. Doesn't enjoy that much support, but that's the B'Chodesh.
Non-kosher milk is always yellow, isn't it?
If it's totally non-kosher milk, correct, is yellow. Now,
from a non-kosher meat.
From a non-kosher meat, right. That's how you get non-kosher milk, right. From a non-kosher meat, pig, camel, whatever it may be. The other extreme is the Chassam Sefer that says, just like we find, for instance, Gvina Sakum, cheese from a Gentile is usher, even if we know 100% that there was no non-kosher enzymes introduced. As the Rambam says, it was made from grass. But as I mentioned before, the Chazal prohibits things with teeth and with loy plug. So therefore, if you have what's called Gvinas Akum, Gvinas Akum, cheese. Gvina Sakum, cheese of a Gentile, is totally prohibited. There's no way to be moderate.
Rabbi, why is it? I mean, I'm still not clear why I understand. If you give them all ingredients, and you put them in the red, and because, you know, it does whatever it makes by itself, it's not kosher. Why do they go to that extreme?
Because a lot of times you find Chazal make a takana, especially at the time when the takana was necessary, they felt if they give loopholes, the whole takana would fall down. Now, I can only speculate after the fact why they thought so. Maybe there were a lot of merchants then that they felt would sell cheese that really was made with non-kosher ingredients, And they would say, oh, we use the grass enzyme, whatever grass was in those days. That was a substitute for what came out of the stomach of an animal to produce the cheese, to make it into cheese. So they felt that the only way we really could be safe if we outlawed together. That's a klal. Just like today, we know on Shabbos, there's a lot of prohibitions that remain, even though maybe the reason doesn't remain. Medication, very possible. At the time of the Gemara, when a person had a headache, he took some of those herbs or something. Today it doesn't happen, but still, it's on the books. We can't change it. And I always say, not that Chazal need my haskama, they surely don't need my haskama, but it makes a lot of sense, because there'll be a lot of things that we all agree maybe have no relevance today. And there'll be a lot of things that have relevance today. But there'll be a lot of things in the middle that we'll dispute. So who's going to decide? No one. Everyone for himself, and therefore a lot of the rabbinical gedarim, fences that were created to prevent us from violating stronger isurim, will fall aside. Now, it's very possible, I'm not into Kabbalah, the Gaon says a lot of times there's reasons in prohibitions that we don't know. Chazal kept from us, whether a Kabbalah, other reasons, you know, that's very true. The Vilna Gaon said that. But I'm saying Al Pi Nigla simply said, just like they have Lahavdil legislation, if something's on the books, it doesn't fall to the wayside unless a later Congress comes and nullifies it, abrogates it. The truth is, some of those laws are in the books. People don't keep them, but they're on the books. It's there, and unless it's abrogated, it's nullified, it's overturned, it's on the books. By Torah, unless we have a Bezdin that's greater than the original Bezdin, it stays on the books. So according to Chacham Sofer, Chol Yisrael, forget it. There's no leniencies. It was created like a takana that has no loopholes. Then we have the middle road, the Beis Meir, and the Ramosha subscribes to this, that it's true there are certain loopholes, but the loopholes have to follow the guidelines of as we find in the Gemara. Meaning to say, the Gemara has a case which says if a non-Jew is milking his cow and a Jew is behind the fence but he could get up and see, that's mutter. So what does that teach us? That if we could create a system or a situation that is similar to that, meaning to say, we're fairly sure. He says we're sure, so therefore it won't be cholavakum. Today, there's government supervision, even though the government supervision really is really not very energetic, because they don't feel the government that there's any possibility of introducing pig's milk, but together with the fact that it's very unlikely with the supervision, that's Ramosha's heter. Therefore, he says me'ikir the din, the halacha of cholav Yisrael does not apply today. He himself was mocked. He didn't call vodka Ramosha. Right, right. Europe, it could be different. 100%. Some people make that mistake. Like a lot of people quote Ramosha saying, "Ah, cholav Yisrael is not applicable today. The halacha doesn't apply anymore." In the United States, it doesn't apply. I understand certain cases in Europe, they're not so large, the production of milk, they have little farms, and maybe sometimes they even use a little pig's milk over there, give it a little spice or something. And Achinami, it could very well apply within Europe. Chol Yisrael is alive and well. Chol Vakum is usher. So therefore, Ramosha coined the term Chol of Stam or Chol of Companies. Because you can't use the word and say Chol Vakum is mutter. It's not mutter. He's saying this is not Chol Vakum. But to say Chol Vakum is mutter, that's an incorrect term, because Chol Vakum is usher. This is not Chol Vakum. There was an interesting. Yeah, I don't think it's around anywhere else. Chol Stam, Chol of Companies, this is already Ramosha's term. There was a controversy between Tzvi Pesach Frank and the Chazon Ish concerning powdered milk. The Tzvi Pesach felt powdered milk is permitted, and his line of reasoning was basically that even though surely if it comes from non-kosher milk, it'll be non-kosher, but the Chazal only prohibited milk. So therefore, if the guy sells powdered milk, since we really don't have a true chash that it's not kosher, it's only a takana that we're abiding by because it was instituted, and therefore the takana remains, therefore powdered milk is mutter, chazenish is chaylokanim, and therefore powdered milk, he feels, is usher. Butter, mikir didin, is mutter. Why? Because butter never went into takana, because you can't make butter with non-kosher milk. Non-kosher milk won't make butter. You know, it's interesting that Chazal had their facts. You know, how did they know? Before they made their halachas, they checked things out. You cannot make milk, you cannot make butter. Therefore, there are those who are not makbid when it comes to butter. They have chalavak. My mother was a child, even in the yeshiva. The yeshiva was makbid and chal v'Yisrael as far as what they served went. A lot of the talmidim were not, but the yeshiva was. But butter, they had butter chalavakim, especially the government used to distribute big cakes of butter, and they would send it for free for the educational institutions, and they weren't makbid on butter. Certain cheeses that are not hard cheeses, some hold chalavakim is more like cottage cheese. Since it's not gvina sakum, so since it's not usher under gvina, because it's not cheese, so it has to be usher under the isser of cholavakum. But since you cannot make cheese of like cottage cheese from trace milk, so therefore there's no isser of sort of Moshe's Mesupik. He doesn't know for sure whether, since it's cheese, so even though it's not the cheese the Gemara was talking about, so maybe it's mutter, maybe it's usher, but some hold even cottage cheese would be more lenient than actual milk, because it's cheese, but it cannot be made from treif milk. Well, we're for live already. Another minute. Okay. Let me tell you also another halacha, which we mentioned, an interesting halacha. I hope it doesn't cause any hardship to anyone. There is a question about drinking in a non-Jewish establishment. So Gemara, the Ramah, or the Mechaber in Siman Kuf Yadal, discusses it. We figure you can't eat the bread, can't eat the food. That's to prevent socializing. Probably the biggest possibility of socializing is going into a non-Jewish house or going into a non-Jewish store that the proprietor is Jewish and having a drink. Some say you can't go in for coffee. Starbucks will shoot me if I posk that way. But most are maker with maybe Starbucks. I think Steinberg owns it. It's probably a Jewish establishment. I think a fellow Steinberg.
Schultz.
Oh. Maybe Starbucks sold to Schultz recently.
No, he's
Jewish guy. But usually the psak is coffee, tea, anything short of alcohol drinks are permitted. But it's a true shaila. Before you go into a establishment that is non-Jewish and you have an alcohol drink, you have to look into the shaila. Now you got to say, who among us is going to go to a non-Jewish establishment and have a drink? I think all of us, one time in our life. You know, in the times, you know, used to date, used to go into a lounge, you know, used to serve drinks. Not so posh. You have to look into the shaila. But this is just a question I'm showing you to round off the halachas of separation between the Jew and the non-Jew, that it shouldn't lead to intermarriage. This is one of the halachas that was instituted, drinking surely in a house of a non-Jew, that we see logically could lead to intermarriage. Okay, everyone should have a good night. Getting the pressure here.